College football summer is no time to slouch because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris bring you five topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Number one.
All right, we're getting right into it. First question on five on it. Did you like seeing players wearing their traditional uniforms in the All-Star game this year as opposed to those special All-Star jerseys we've seen in recent years?
Yes. In fact, it was so natural that I didn't even notice at first. Before then, I was like, oh, good. They're not wearing the uniforms that were created for the All-Star game. And by the way, I don't know how many times I did this, but every time I saw the American League one, why did I think it said AI? Every single time.
That's the font, right?
Something about it, I was like, oh, AI. And I'm like, artificial intelligence, Allen Iverson, American League, what? I'm watching a baseball game. Didn't even put two and two together because it was that big and it was that obtrusive on the jersey. And I understand people still liked it, but you want to be able to see your people in their uniforms. And that's why I was able to identify it late in the game that it got way too royally, you know, around like inning seven or so for the American League. There's just too much Royals gray and blue out there. It was on the mound. They were running bases.
Well, the problem is there were no Royals starters, so all four of their people came off the bench. And so, yeah, they can all be in at the same time. So if you got four out of nine players for one team, it's going to be blank-y. And this time it was royally.
Teamy, royally.
To your point about the AI, so what the problem with the jerseys is they used a lowercase cursive font. So the A is like a lowercase A into an L, but the L doesn't have a loop.
The loop, yeah. So it just looked like AI.
Yeah, and there's no dot, obviously, at the top of the I, but it looks like an undotted I as opposed to an A and an actual L. Why not go with the capital? But I guess they didn't go with the capital for the NL either. But yeah, it was my answer to this is very simple. When they went to the All-Star jerseys, I said, why? It's now harder for people who only follow their team and the teams they face all the time to understand who everybody is easily from a wide shot when you're looking at things. Now that they're in their jerseys, you get a quick identifier of, oh, that's so-and-so from whatever team, especially if they're a breakout player, first-time All-Star. It just helps with a branding purpose to familiarize yourself with the teams. Now, the good news is they still sold the All-Star jerseys. Like the light blue, or I guess more of an electric blue for the NL, and then the darker blue for the AL.
It was like a navy for the AI.
You're just gonna call it the AI?
Yeah, it was silly.
So for the American League, and the jerseys were very popular. It's what we saw at the Home Run Derby. So popular, in fact, that the Shohei Ohtani and Paul Skeens jerseys, they sold out, and they were making fresh ones at the shop. They're on site for people to buy. That's how you know your game is doing well.
Well, and I was also going to say, like, the pivotal moments, too, in the game. Like, when you're thinking about PCA nearly colliding with Kyle Tucker, you're like, oh, there they are, two Cubs in the outfield. Looky here. It's just a way to self-identify. Or when you're watching Kyle Schwarber hit bombs in the Phillies jersey, you're thinking to yourself, he's wearing pinstripes, and he should be wearing blue, not red, and this is a real buzzkill. And then you see him go down to one knee, and I'm like, awesome.
He was,
but
down
at the same time, Phillies.
Well, yeah, he was doing the Philly thing. He was down on bended knee, you know?
Boys to men. But it helps just hammer the point home. Who's on your team? Who's no longer on your team? And then who's on somebody else's team?
And who's on somebody else's team that you wish were on your team?
That too.
Eugenio Suarez? Anyone?
Yeah,
anyone?
And you know, the light blue trim on those Diamondbacks jerseys just really popped, didn't it? It was a nice little accent color.
I just like the regular uniforms. They are great. Everybody gets a hat, and then the jersey, if you want to buy it, we'll make some for you. But I was always a guy, if I was a jersey buyer, I'd want one with like the all-star patch. That's all I need. Regular jersey, all-star patch, we're good.
I love the gold for the World Series. That's the special one to me. That's the money.
Number two.
After seeing how PCA Pete Crow Armstrong handled himself at the All-Star Game, could we see him as the face of baseball one day?
I think this question is important to note. It's could, and based on how we saw him on this big stage. So when you consider all those things, you're basically asking, is it possible? Yes, it is possible. And even the announced team, you heard Joe Davis talk about it when it came to the cheers that PCA was receiving, the crowd that he got, how that was something that had been mounting, the fan support. So I feel like this is definitely something where you're asking that question because he continues to show up on big stages, whether it's entertained with his play in the outfield, whether it is amazed with his plays, you know, when he's hitting the ball, you know, where he hits the ball from, it's a highlight reel made to happen. So I think all of those things, when you consider them, of course, he's a guy who can be a face of baseball. Yes, I never think there's just one, by the way. That's never really how I feel about it. So in that scope, I think the answer is yes.
I think the answer is yes, simply because when you think about faces of baseball, who really comes to mind? Who jumps out? I think Skeens is a guy that comes to people's mind. Ohtani, obviously, is a guy who comes to people's minds. Aaron Judge falls in that category as well. But when you're going down the list of people, when you say Major League Baseball, stars, go, who else comes to mind? I think there are plenty of spots open and available, and PCA, with the right type of year, could jump into one of those spots. And the All-Star Game was a good jumping off point. It wasn't a ceiling point. It wasn't like he did something in that All-Star Game that says, that's the guy right there. But he certainly is involved in the conversation of next up, on deck, if you will.
Number three.
Which young player on the White Sox is most likely to finish their career with the most All-Star appearances? Good luck.
Wow, not good luck. Like, is it that bad?
It's a very hard question because who's going to be in the All-Star multiple times?
But also, can we go back to the segment where we heard Steve Sparky Pfeiffer talk about Andrew Vaughn? I'm like, I know this hope for that offense. I know it well. It was something where I was laughing at myself and the hopes and my dreams, and I felt seen. For me, it's probably one of the catchers, is it not? That's one of the positions where, especially, you have it's hard to find talent in the American League in catching. So I feel like in this case, it could be potentially Edgar Caro or Kyle Teal. I feel like between the two of them, one of them has the potential to make the All-Star team multiple times when you consider how young they are in their careers. So that was my initial thought. I'm sorry, Miguel Vargas, I'm just not there yet. But how when it comes you to the position that the both of them play, and you know who they were as prospects and how they've been brought up and what you've seen so far, the potential, I narrowed it down to one of the two.
What if I told you there was a player on the White Sox?
What if I told you
that had a 0.7 war in just 28 at-bats? Would you be happy with that? Would you feel like he was a productive player?
Would Steve Sparky Pfeiffer would be hoping for his offense on the
world?
I'm kidding. It's so good.
So Colson Montgomery is almost at one on the war scale in 28 at-bats. I think he's the guy. I think it is going to be Colson Montgomery. He's been through a lot. He's 23 years old. I think Colson Montgomery's about to show out. He's gotten off to a decent start at the shortstop position. He has impressed me, and all I had heard about him is how unimpressive he had been on his climb to the big leagues. But
it was a path. It was a path filled with twists and turns and question marks.
But if you're going to throw up a 0.7 war in five games played, I'm with it.
So I guess part of my question with this is, like, is there anyone currently on the White Sox you could see being an every year All-Star or being someone that has that high of a ceiling.
I just told you, Colson Montgomery.
Okay, why are you still that? Is that a subliminal Miguel Vargas?
No. Like, I mean, like, I think
really
he's going to be great.
Miguel Vargas,
like,
it's
for
about
you?
His love for Miguel Vargas.
But it's more of like, I'm trying to assess the entire White Sox roster right now as they're in this rebuild, and we're seeing some young players come up right now. But is there any of them that, like, you say Colson Montgomery, is there any of them we could be like, that could be the face of the White Sox for years to come?
My man, we have been wondering who the face of the White Sox has been for many years. It was Jose Abreu, but we were still trying to figure it out at the time because there were options.
Tim, like, Anderson, don't forget about him.
But that's the point, is we didn't really ever have a face. You know, there was no one defined, you couldn't put it on one dude. Ray, don't you feel this
when
way? Especially in Bernstein and Rahimi era.
Yeah, absolutely.
This was something we talked about a lot.
And you bring up Tim Anderson, and it was looking like Tim Anderson was on that trajectory.
Changed
especially
the game.
With the corn game.
Ray, you know, Ray, I was about to say, I was in Iowa when he hit the home run.
Did you stay for the whole game?
Because
if so, you're better than other score hosts.
Wait, Chris Ronji left early?
That was the whole origin of the worst phrase I've ever heard in my life.
What was the phrase?
Well, it wasn't okay, daddy gang, so that narrows it down.
Was the word daddy in there?
Daddy needs a sleep.
That's why he left.
Daddy couldn't get a hotel? Like, what are you talking about
daddy
here?
Daddy needs a sleep.
I stayed in a hotel out there. I didn't drive back that night.
But I think Tim Anderson was on that trajectory after that game.
But that was the height of his
momentum. He was even in the Dairy Queen commercial.
Yes, change the game, which then turned into make the game great again.
Layla, go ahead. Call me daddy.
That was at the height right there. That was the summit for Tim Anderson, unfortunately. And the low point, as we know, was when he decided he wanted to square up.
Jose Ramirez.
Squabble up. Put up his dukes, however you want to say it. My man fell down hard.
That was so embarrassing.
Tim Glassjaw Anderson. And that's, I don't say that as
glass
a point
jaw.
To make fun of him. Bro, did he not display a glass jaw?
The part that, the thing about that is too, you talk about squaring up. He was the first one to square up. This is why it's so embarrassing. He started the square up. He basically started the fight and got
whooped. Who ended it?
Jose Ramirez.
That's Jose right. Ramirez said, you try to put on for your city? Let me show you how I put on for my city.
Jose Ramirez, you should take him seriously just walking down the street because, well, he's wildly successful. But also, do you remember we all are watching Jose Ramirez on deck in the game against the Cubs and we're like, uh-oh, something could go horribly wrong here. Why you didn't think that in the moment when it was happening, knowing you've seen him a million times at that point being in the Central, I don't know.
Sad.
Number four.
After the All-Star game, the Fox Sports broadcast crew shared their World Series predictions. This was Derek Jeter's prediction.
It really is unfair. Last year, I picked the Baltimore Orioles to go to the World Series. And hold on. You picked Boston to go to the World Series.
Well, you know.
But the reason why I picked them is I was looking forward to the trade deadline, and Baltimore had a stacked minor league system. I thought they were going to make a move. They didn't do it. They didn't win. So this year, I am going with the New York Yankees. Brian Cashman. The Yankees are going to beat the Cubs in the World Series.
Whoa.
I'm going with the Yankees because Cashman basically said he's all in. So I expect the Yankees to do something at the trade deadline.
This is 5 on It with Raheemy and Harris. That was Derek Jeter on the Fox Sports post-game show for the All-Star game. So I ask you, Layla and Marshall, what is your World Series matchup prediction? How about your prediction to win the World Series?
So I also was a premature World Series predictor like Derek Jeter. It was 2 years ago that I predicted that the Yankees would go to the World Series and that at the time they would face the Padres. And it was similar thinking, really, to Derek Jeter, as I tend to do. You know, I think a lot like Derek Jeter. So point being, Padres, I figured they were in go-for-it mode. They were wildly motivated by the division they were in. Made sense as to thinking they would get another move. They got enough superstars. And then with the Yankees, they ended up being almost, you know, they got close last year, of course, to winning the World Series. All they needed was Juan Soto. Oh, I just needed Juan Soto for that prediction to come true. I'm sorry, what's his contract again? So All of that said, I think I have to go with what I initially predicted at the beginning of the year, which in the lamest prediction ever was Dodgers Yankees.
Oh, you're just going right back to the well.
No, I mean, it was, but at the beginning of this past year, this season, my initial, like, I don't even know if I said it on the air, my personal World Series prediction to myself, I was like, probably Dodgers Yankees. And it's lame. It's lame as hell.
I don't think it's lame.
But it's just based on the talent and money, really.
I'm not necessarily a believer in the Yankees. Now, listen, before I make this prediction, I reserve the right to change this prediction on August 1st after all the dust has settled. Because
do you know how this job works? They're like, remember that time you said this thing?
That's why I'm giving
you should
the
get
disclaimer.
Fired for saying this thing.
That's why I'm giving the disclaimer. Because a lot can happen between now and the July 31st trade deadline.
We should stone you in the town square.
Please don't do that. Even pebbles would hurt. I got sensitive skin. I got good skin, but it's sensitive skin. Listen. As it stands today, here's what should happen. The World Series should be the Chicago Cubs. Did you hear that part?
The Pittsburgh Steelers? Aaron Rodgers going to the Super Bowl?
No, Chicago Cubs. I didn't say Chicago Bears. I said Chicago Cubs. The Cubs are a type of bear, but they are cubby bears. Chicago Cubs, they will take on the Detroit Tigers.
Oh, let's go. Game on.
He was waiting on that so hard.
I don't believe
game
it.
Game on. Bring it.
Because I think the Tigers and the Cubs are going to make moves, but I could be wrong. But if they make the moves, I really do believe the Cubs pitching is going to do what needs to be done. They're going to get more offensive help. They're going to get there. And I think the Dodgers are... I think they can get the Dodgers.
The Yankees needed Aaron Judge and Juan Soto. Like, keep that in mind.
I understand.
To get to the World Series, they needed Aaron Judge and Juan Soto.
Other contenders include...
And Jose Ramirez is in the ALCS, by the way, just in case we're keeping track.
In my eyes, I could see the Astros getting there with Yordan Alvarez's return. And I could also see the Boston Red Sox just completely continue to go flame on, winners of their last 10. But as of right now, I like the Tigers, and I like the Cubs, and I like the Cubs with Craig Counsell's ability now, switch up his lineup, get lefty ready to handle business.
I hate my lamey-lame prediction about it, but...
It's okay. You can change it if you want.
It's going to change for me.
Oh, okay.
My lamey-lame prediction, though, was indeed just the two biggest market teams squaring off. I know. I'm sorry.
Well, the thing about that is the scary thing, as we know, is the trade deadline. As you know, you talked, Marshall, about the Cubs and the Tigers. But what are the Yankees going to add at the deadline? And that's going to be the thing.
It's not
that's what Derek
saying.
Jeter told me.
It's not. It's the Dodgers. Like, every time I look up a Cubs possible trade target,
the Dodgers
like,
also
the
want
Dodgers
them?
The Dodgers are also interested in this player. And I'm like, oh, God, again?
Yep.
Number five. Last question, 2 minute drill here on Five on It, because you know who we have next?
Brian Urlacher.
We have him next. Fifth question, live question. If you were to be awarded to the All-Star team for any activity, mundane life skill, or hobby, what All-Star team would you be a part of?
Hand washing dishes. I do it all the time. I tried to fill my dishwasher. I couldn't do it. It was really bothering me. I needed those dishes clean right away. One person. I also wash dishes for many people. It's hand washing dishes and it's not even close. And then I wonder why my nails break.
Okay, that was a very interesting answer. I was just talking to my friend yesterday about how hand washing dishes is underrated. And the time as a child I complained about washing dishes, I could have just washed the dishes.
Exactly.
It's crazy how quickly you can wash dishes.
And everything is on the top rack. Like, everything. Well, then what the hell is the point of the bottom rack? And I do it better than a machine.
I really do believe that Layla is onto something here, but that's not my answer. My answer is this. David Hall, where you at? Come see me at the Scrabble, yo. Come get whooped. Also, Two-Ply. I'm sorry, Two-Ply was that's Matt Spiegel when I talk about Tecmo. But Tecmo be the other thing. Tecmo, Super Bowl, All-Star. I've won tournaments.
I think you just want to beat all of our coworkers. I think that's what you want to do.
They want to be good at the things I'm good at. So let's ride. Scrabble and Tecmo Super Bowl.
Fair enough.
I can peel a clementine in one peel. That's mine.
That's really good.
I'm good at catching things as they're falling. Put me in the All-Star game for that event.
You could
coffee
you
mug. Might,
you could safe. Be a Packers receiver at this point.
Sparky,
where you at? Let's talk to a legend. Brian Urlacher joins us next, and we also have an event that he wants you to talk about as well. So you will listen to that next on Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score.
College football summer is no time to slouch because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Urlacher, who has been to six Pro Bowls, once the Defensive Rookie of the Year, once the Defensive Player of the Year in the National Football League, and the face of this Bears franchise. Urlacher comes through the gut and sacks Tavarius Jackson.
Having a pretty good game, Urlacher.
A phenomenal game.
You know, it's always a chess match with Brian Urlacher because he was so good, they would make everything look the exact same.
Quick throw, picked off Urlacher. And Brian Urlacher will cruise down the sideline and coast for the touchdown. Dropped, and Urlacher unloads on the rookie Colston.
And Urlacher comes up with his second turnover of the game.
The history of this position is unmatched by any other team. Bill George, Dick Butkus, Mike Singletary, and now, I can barely say it, me.
That's how you introduce him, the Bears linebacker from 2000 to 2012, the Hall of Famer, four-time first-team All-Pro, eight-time Pro Bowler, and you heard it, 2005 NFL Defensive Player of the Year, Brian Urlacher. Thanks for joining us here on Raheem and Harris on The Score.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. I like hearing those highlights. That was fun.
That's the idea. We want to like take you back,
yeah.
Transport you in the moment. Anything even stand out to
up.
You? Yeah. Does anything stand out to you from even that? Hearing that just now.
Oh, all I could do was hear him, but I in my mind I'm running through those plays as they're calling them out because I couldn't see them. So I just heard, you know, I hear the play by play, and then I try and picture the plays in my mind. I can see all of them, so it's cool. It's always fun to reminisce about the good plays.
Yeah.
If you want to see Brian Urlacher, you can see him. He's on Twitch as well. And it's always great to see you, Brian, and check in with you and see how you're doing. And also to see what you think about what your former team, the Bears, is doing. The news that Ben Johnson is the head coach. The news of the Ryan Poles getting an extension through 2029. Where are you with your former team as they try to get back to the levels of play that, of course, you guys were able to do during your time here?
It's exciting right now, I think, when you look at what they've done with Ben Johnson. Dennis Allen as well, I thought was a key addition in this offseason. I like what he's done in his career as a D coordinator. But I'm excited about Caleb. You know, I think he's the guy for the job. Much better numbers than I expected last year out of him. You know, it's tough to be a rookie quarterback in the NFL. Take away those two guys, you know, the Redskins quarterback and the Broncos quarterback, and I think he's rookie of the year, you know, the way he played. But didn't turn the ball over. It's exciting to see what he's going to be able to do under Ben Johnson because he's going to put him in position to make a lot of plays, a lot of big plays like he did up there in Detroit with those guys.
I appreciate you talking about just the talent level too. And as you're analyzing the game, maybe watching the individual Bears games last season, what stood out to you about maybe the way he was able to adapt within game and then, you know, answer and try to make something happen to turn into a win in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, this is going to be bad, but he didn't have a lot of help last year. You know, I think, you have to get rid of the football. Sacks are on the quarterback and the offensive line. I'm not going to say it's all on the offensive line because you got to get rid of the football. But just the way he, kept himself in plays. You know, he extended plays sometimes too long. It's going to happen when you're trying to make plays. But he'll get better at those situations as well and understand how much time he has and he has to throw the football away. But I just like, he's very accurate with throwing the football, more accurate than I gave him credit for. And if they run the ball though, like they've done in the years past, it's just going to help him. You know, they're going to face less men in the box and he's going to have a chance to make some plays, down the field.
What is it about Ben Johnson's offense that you've seen obviously for the last few seasons in Detroit that you're most excited about him implementing in Chicago?
The explosiveness, man, down the plays down the field. They're inside as well. So it helps when you have perfect weather every game, but just the way they make plays down the field. The running game was always there. You had Montgomery and then was it Jahmyr Gibbs that all they're making big plays in the running game. And just the diversity of plays he ran, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? I'll think of a good, it's just, the amount of different stuff he did every game, and the trick plays. It was just fun to watch. The Detroit offense with him at the helm was one of my favorite teams to watch.
We are talking to Brian Urlacher, not just about what he thinks about football. I know an event is coming up we want to get to discuss as well, but staying in this vein for now, when you look at the Bears, I assume you're still looking at it based on scouting as a linebacker. You're still looking at it based on how you would try to defend it, or maybe how you would try to mess it up, or what it would be like to be on the other side. What stands out to you about, like, maybe the Ben Johnson offense, where you're saying to yourself, this would have given me trouble?
Man, the misdirection plays, and like I said, the trick plays, because he's always got something in there for, I feel like, every team. You know, they always have some of the best, and they all worked. All their plays worked, I feel like, up there in Detroit as well. All their trick plays never backfired on him. I'm not sure how aggressive he'll be as a head coach with those fourth down plays. You know, I think Dan Campbell gave him a lot. When you have four downs to get a first down, knowing that going to a series, that you're probably going to, and fourth and one or two, you're going for it every time. I think you can be a little more free with your play calling, maybe get a little more freedom. And then, like I said, I'm not sure how aggressive he'll be as a head coach, but he's, I assume, very similar to Campbell. The complexity of the plays they ran, the running game was different, the cutbacks, and then the short game passing was always really good for them as well. So you got to be on your toes when you're playing a team like that.
Brian, I'd love to see how this is going to work, the meshing, the step forward that Ben Johnson can have Caleb Williams take. But I want to take you back before Ben Johnson got here. I don't know if you've followed the story at all about what happened before the draft with his dad getting involved and the possibility they're going to try to work their way around the Bears. What did you make of this idea that they were trying to avoid the Bears, because it has been a place that people are not confident that a quarterback, a franchise level quarterback, can come to and flourish?
I heard something about that. I honestly didn't think anything of it at all. You know, I whether it's true or not doesn't matter, because once they draft you, you're pretty much going there. So you cannot want to go there. You can try and work your way around it. But I think Eli Manning was the only one successful at doing that. Maybe John Elway back in the day when he set out a year or something like that. But, you know, these days, and you just play for the team that drafts you. I can't see any situation where you wouldn't want to be the number one pick, no matter what team it is. Your mentality should be you're going to go in there and change the direction of that organization. I'm sure that's what he has now. Like I said, I heard a little bit about it, but I really didn't read too much into it.
Well, and you're a football dad yourself, as we know. Your son, Kennedy, played for Notre Dame. They had a great season as well. You know, what do you think about
this? He actually transferred from Notre Dame, but he was there last year.
Yeah.
He just went out to USC in the spring transfer portal. So, yeah, it's been fun watching him. You know, last year, going to all those games, those playoff games, and the national championship was really cool. To get a chance to see him get out there and play a little bit. Didn't play a lot. That's why he transferred. He wanted to get a chance to get on the field. So he transferred to USC, and I think he'll get that opportunity out there. But it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you about that, just what it was like observing, you know, at this level, you know, being that high at the highest levels of football, when you're talking about just your observations of last season, and then the decision going into it and being able to have that freedom to pick from these big schools like this and being able to do something. Not the case when you were playing in college, as you know.
Yeah, so much different now. You're right. You know, as a dad, I try and root for my son and the team as much as I can. I try and stay out of all the, you know, there's so much stuff that goes into it and goes around it. All the parents talking and just, so if we can, we sit away from the family section. So I don't have to hear all that stuff, but you know, cause I want to root for every kid. That's just the way it is. I'm a big fan of the game, but yeah, the landscape of college football is so different now with the transfer portal and the NIL. I understand it. I don't have to like it. But it benefited my son because he got a chance to go to a place where he'll probably get to play a little bit more than he would have at Notre Dame. But it's just amazing, the landscape and the money these kids are getting. I'm glad they're getting paid. I think most of them deserve it, and they've earned it. But it's just changing the whole dynamic of college football.
We're talking to Brian Urlacher, who you can also see on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. And I just wanted to follow up real quick with asking, what advice do you think you can give him at this time, and how much of it, as you said, it's so different from era to era. How much of it can you give, knowing that college football and that whole landscape is so different? Like, do you give him as much as you would say before the NIL era or before the transfer portal era?
It's, I mean, all I'm concerned about is what he does on the field, if that makes sense. You know, the NIL and the transfers, that's going to, the NIL take care of itself if you play well. That's the way I feel. So when you get on the field, you need to take advantage of your opportunities. You know, run to the football. Don't make mistakes mentally. Physical errors are going to happen. You know, sometimes you're going to miss tackles, stuff like that. But when you get a chance to get in the game, take advantage of it. Run to the football. Let your coach know you deserve to be in there. And that's the only stuff in your control. The NIL and all the other junk, that'll take care of itself if you make plays.
Brian, I want to ask you, because you've been around the Bears for so long, going back this century, basically, you've been associated with the Bears. That's a 25-year chunk of your life.
I know.
Is there anything, given how honest and just straightforward you've always been and giving your opinion, is there anything you can point to as to why no quarterback has been able to kind of break through with the Bears in recent history?
Man, I wish I could answer that question. It's frustrating. I know, because we've had some talented guys there. You know, Jay, Rex was awesome. Kyle Orton was good. I'm talking about guys I played with. I thought Jim Miller was awesome. Cade was talented. It just hasn't panned out, and I don't understand why. I'd like to say the weather, but then you got the guys in Green Bay just ripping it up. Every time they get a quarterback, they just tear it up. You know, you go from Brett to Aaron to the guy they have up there now, Jordan Love. So I don't know why it's that. And you can try and say coaching, but we've had some great coaches as well to mentor these guys. So, you know, I would like to see him give Mitch a little bit longer try there in Chicago. You know, he was, I think, number two or three pick in the draft. I thought he had a chance to do pretty well. It didn't work out. I don't know, honestly, man. It's frustrating as a fan to see the way it's gone with quarterbacks. But I like where Caleb's going. I think he has the tools and the talent. And now with Ben Johnson there, they should be doing pretty well together.
Brian, I asked you this question at a casino in Michigan City a couple of years ago, but I'll ask it again. Being a Hall of Famer, who do you think is the next Bear to make the Pro Football Hall of Fame? I remember at the time you answered Olin Krutz. How do you feel?
I still feel the same, man. I don't see how Olin – he doesn't even get any – like, they don't even talk about Olin, which drives me crazy. And you could also throw Charles in that conversation. You know, Pep got in. Devin got in right away. Olin to me is the guy who should get in. You know, you look at his resume, I think 8 or 9 Pro Bowls, 13, 14 years. I was very fortunate because I got to practice against the best center in the league every single day in practice. It benefited my career. It benefited our defenses, playing ability. So it drives me crazy. Whenever I get a chance to talk about it, I bring up Olin because in my opinion, he's the one guy that needs to be in there.
Okay. Aaron Rodgers is still playing football, Brian. Yeah. He's now in the Steelers. What do you make of him continuing his career with Mike Tomlin and the gang in Pittsburgh?
So I'm an Aaron Rodgers fan. People can get mad if they want to. I like the way he plays. I like what he stands for. I like what he says. I'm a fan. My wife's a Steelers fan, so she's over the moon about him being there. I'm not as excited as she is. But as a football fan, I want to see what he can do with that team. You know, they got a great defense. They got DK Metcalf. They got some guys on offense that can play. So if Aaron, you know, comes back 2 years after that Achilles injury the way we think he will, I think they'll have a good season.
What's their ceiling in your eyes?
Oh, they're in a tough division, man. You got Cincy, Baltimore, Cleveland, maybe not so great. But I would say 11, 12 wins. You know, Tomlin's never finished under 500. I don't see that happening this year.
This is just a preview of, I think, what we can expect on Sunday. I know you're here with us for a pretty cool event. The City Cruises Live Sports Series, A Night with Chicago Football Conference Champions. Join Brian Urlacher, Rex Grossman, Alex Brown, as the Bears great share iconic moments, career highlights, and hilarious tales from their days on the gridiron. Yours is coming up on Sunday. This is going to be a cool event. What can you tell us about it?
It should be a blast. And like you said, Rex will be there. I haven't seen Rex in 15 years, so I'm excited to see that dude. Maybe 12 years. AB, I talk to all the time, so I'm excited to see him and hang out. 3 hours on that boat, you know, we're going to talk about Jeff Joniak will be the MC, you know, pretty much, in my opinion, the voice of the Bears. So it should be a fun couple hours just reminiscing about that 2006 season, what we did, what we didn't do, what we should have done, some of the stories that maybe happened in the locker room. And it's going to be an intimate setting, you know, on that boat. We'll all be right there around each other. So it should be pretty fun.
Is there any story preview you can give us that people might want to hear on the lake?
Oh, man. You know, I'm going to let – so Jeff Joniak's leading this thing. I'm going to let Jeff – and he's like the Bears guy. He knows everything about the Bears. He knows everything about that season. I'm going to let him lead it. You know, we'll answer the questions he asked. We'll also ask some fan questions. But I'm assuming – I mean, my favorite memory is getting that George Halas Trophy at Soldier Field. We were standing on the stage with Miss McCaskey, and they after we beat the Saints up that day, they gave us the George Halas Trophy in front of our fans with the snow coming down. It was pretty awesome.
We love it. That is a great preview. Brian Urlacher, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us on Twitch. We've all enjoyed looking at your game balls in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks so much, Brian.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. That was Brian Urlacher joining us here on Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score. I see what you did there at the end.
Well, I didn't force a question on him. I just need to know what exactly was going on with the Pittsburgh Steelers, because he said, I am an Aaron Rodgers fan unapologetically and believes, what do you say, 11, 12 wins? That gets you in the playoffs, right?
That gets you in the playoffs.
And you can't get to the Super Bowl unless you're in the playoffs.
You're not a Super Bowl team.
So if you want ticket information, I'll mention it one more time. cityexperiences.com/city-cruises. That's cityexperiences.com/city-cruises. This is the company that is putting these events together. AJ Pierzynski was part of one of these earlier, so you kind of have an idea of what to expect. So that is this Sunday with Brian Urlacher, as he mentioned, Jeff Joniak, Rex Grossman, and Alex Brown. Coming up next here on 670 The Score, we have to get into a claim that Alex Rodriguez made last night. I thought, in the department of Russ Dorsey saying, are we still doing this? I thought that I had passed this point in the career of asking about things Alex Rodriguez says.
No, he gets paid to give his opinion on things, so I'm very much used to it. But I think this particular topic is going to ruffle feathers and got people with both eyebrows raised after he said it.
There's some revisionist history going on. We'll explain next.
College football summer is no time to slouch, because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series, as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit, as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Rob, Bruce Levine on WSCR Radio in Chicago. First of all, as a baseball fan, I want to thank you for your apology. I'm sure it wasn't easy to do, so thank you for that.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that happened, and now I feel...
How do you feel?
Better for learning that information. This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score. That's Bruce Levine talking to Alex Rodriguez. And I assume that was in connection to the Mitchell report?
Are you talking to Rob Manfred there?
Rob Manfred? Man. Good to know.
What was Rob Manfred apologizing for in that context? I guess
was that the Astros cheating scandal, I'm assuming?
Oh.
The thing is, Bruce has been around so long,
it could have been a lot of things.
Could have been anything. Yeah.
But the reason we bring it up is because Alex Rodriguez said some interesting things last night on the postgame show on Fox Sports after a very exciting All-Star game that we celebrated earlier in the show in the 10 o'clock hour. So let's listen to what A-Rod had to say about his guy, Rob Manfred.
I agree with you. I'm a big Rob Manfred fan, and I think he deserves a lot of credit. Single-handedly, I mean, with the changes he's made the last two or three years to really save our game, he probably belongs in Cooperstown. But the reason why I like this, Colin, technology's made the game better. Anytime you make players and umpires more accountable, it's a great thing. Going back 10 years, that strike you see right there on the screen, 83% of the time, the umpires were getting it right. 10 years ago. Today, that number's ballooned to 97%. So it's a much better quality, much better game, much better accuracy. All those things are good. Now, the application of it, we have to go see how it works. I know they've been doing it in the minor leagues. I am really looking forward to tonight to see how that plays out, because I'm a little bit on the fence, but I'm more pro, because I think Rob Manfred deserves some credit. He's built some equity here over the last 3 or 4 years with his changes. And I think the game has the gift and the curse of being so married to their history. I think some of the other leagues have really pushed the envelope.
Okay, so clearly I had some things on my mind when I wanted to talk about this. That was to Colin Cowherd, as we mentioned, it's Alex Rodriguez. I think part of the reason he feels this way is because Manfred saved him. As I mentioned, the Mitchell report and him very much being a part of it, Alex Rodriguez has, whether or not we wanted it to happen, become the face of Major League Baseball's broadcasts. He's one of the big front men. You see him in all of the playoff coverage. He's one of the Fox Sports faces. It's him, Kevin Burkhardt, David Ortiz, used to be Frank Thomas, and now it's Derek Jeter. And we know them as anytime there's a big game in the game, you know, playoff coverage, all-star, what have you, these are the people that you see. Rob Manfred saved him. He has so much loyalty to him. I'm talking about a commissioner who called a trophy a piece of metal. And when there was one of the biggest cheating scandals in all of sports in the last, what, I don't know, let's say 90 years, what happened?
I'm listening to this dude talk, and y'all know how I feel about Alex Rodriguez. He's a cheater. He comes off as, because I don't know him personally, as pretty pompous. I get it. He got mountains of money. I can't argue that fact. But when they tried to stuff him down our throats as far as ESPN, Fox, like, and the pass that he's been given, and I know we are a very forgiving society when people come out and admit that they've done wrong. But he obviously wants Rob Manfred to be a Hall of Famer because guess what? He's the commissioner. He's got the power to help usher in Alex Rodriguez at some point in time. He's an influential person in baseball. He's the commissioner. So I see this as a certain level of quid pro quo. You know, just you help me. I'll talk good, well about you. You talk well about me. What, Scott, what, two commissioners are enshrined in the Baseball Hall of Fame? I don't see it, mainly because, yes, he was the one who was able to move baseball into the 21st century in terms of what they're doing with, we just saw the ABS last night. That's coming next season. It's coming down the pipe. He's the one who got the pitch clock in. But it's not like he came up with the ideas, but at the same time, he did have to approve pushing it through.
Well, as an executive, I think you don't necessarily have to come up with the ideas, but you have to be open to them and try to figure out a way to implement them and decide whether or not they're good for your game.
And he did that. So I give him credit for that. But the Hall of Fame pandering is how I took it. Do you see it as anything different?
I see it as somebody being loyal to someone who saved his ass.
And could continue to do good in terms of his fate as a potential future Hall of Famer.
And when I say saved it, It's not like it was that big of a concern for his playing career. He was wildly successful at that time. Like, I think sometimes you forget how good of a baseball player he really was because of his commentary. But you can't separate the two and make it sound objective.
I think the biggest thing for me with Manfred, why he should not be in the Hall of Fame, when that whole cheating scandal took place, when he said the whole thing, which he apologized to Bruce Levine for, Bruce accepted his apology, I should
Rob,
say.
Bruce Levine, the WSCR Radio in Chicago. First of all, as a baseball fan, I want to thank you for your apology.
I seriously thought that was regarding the Mitchell report.
No, that was about him calling it a piece of metal and him, you know, he had to come back and backtrack on calling it a piece of metal.
Yeah, I stand on the first part.
The problem I had with Manfred in that situation is he offered all those players immunity, so no one was punished as they should have been for cheating.
Right. And that's the issue when it comes to putting him in the Hall of Fame. Yeah, as much as we talk about writers not voting for people who are part of the steroid era, Alex Rodriguez being a recognized part of it, and I don't necessarily harp on it that much because I think it's a case-by-case basis. In this case, having a third party to check opinions like those that are so aligned in the light of us talking to Mike Florio earlier about collusion, you appreciate it while it's there. You appreciate that third party check.
Yeah, I can ride with that.
Like, I'll trust the BBWAA as to whether or not he belongs in the Hall of Fame. I'm not trusting Alex Rodriguez. And I understand being loyal. None of us are necessarily perfect. I get all of those things.
What do you trust Alex Rodriguez for? That's my follow-up to that.
I think he's not as bad of a broadcaster as people make him out to be.
I don't think he's a bad broadcaster. I just his face makes me go, ugh.
But when it comes to opinions like those, I am going to check them.
Yeah.
Would I love to hear more of what he has to say about playing shortstop and hitting his yes. personal experiences?
Yes.
Absolutely.
I'll sign up for that. But the extra stuff, I want no parts of it. Stick to what you see on the field.
That would be great. But I just don't, based on that relationship alone, which I think a lot of us already questioned as far as why is this person in this position? Well, answers sometimes tell on themselves. Coming up next here on Raheem and Harris on the Score, we continue our stalking segment. The trade deadline is coming up. We are still looking at pitchers. And I think one of them who should be considered, and I'll tell you why, is next.
College football summer is no time to slouch because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.